This is Austin Carr from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you're talking Cavs basketball with Kenny and JT on 1480 WHBC.
Yeah, we're looking at the calendar right now, and let's see here. What are we, July 2nd? Draft is the 20th. So 27 days from now, the Cavaliers could make a pick that might alter the direction of the franchise in a positive way, because everything I'm hearing, this is a draft that you wanted to be in the top five, and you could get an all-star caliber player for sure, and maybe a franchise-changing player for sure in this draft. Let's talk all about that right now by going to the Wake 'em Way hotline and bring in the outstanding Cavaliers beat reporter, Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris Fedor. It is Chris Fedor. C-Fed, how are you, my friend?
Guys, what's going on? I'm great. How are you?
We're good. We appreciate you making time for us, Chris. And we were all hoping that they'd get the number one pick as the old Apbith, another ping pong ball in the hopper. We were keeping our fingers crossed. Well, it didn't get all the way up to number one, but enough ping pong balls to move up two spots to number three, Chris. How big of an impact are those two spots moving up from five for this basketball team? How big of an impact do you think that can make?
Yeah, I think it's a significant impact, guys. I think it's the difference between getting a franchise-changing talent and somebody along the same lines of what they already have here in Isaac Okoro, Darius Garland, and Colin Sexton. I think they have a good young core, but I think the ceiling of this young core and the team overall is limited by the fact that they just don't have the guy. They don't have the foundation centerpiece. That's what's missing, and now they're in position to get that guy. And it doesn't matter who it is at number three. This is considered a four-player draft with those four guys, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs, and Evan Mobley, ahead of the rest of the guys, Scotty Barnes, Jalen Johnson, and some of the other guys that they would have been looking at if they would have been 5 to 10.
Chris, what we're seeing in the NBA playoffs right now, do you really have to have that centerpiece? I mean, with the slew of all these injuries that we're seeing, Giannis goes down, Trey goes down, LeBron. I mean, take your pick. That centerpiece goes down, and it's easy to say that, okay, they're already in the playoffs, and somebody's got to step up. But, I mean, isn't this more about team now and less about a big three, a big two? I mean, heck, even Chris Paul didn't form up with a big three, ends up going to Phoenix, who was a proverbial loser, and now all of a sudden – they're on the cusp of winning the title.
I mean, I think the direction that you want to go when it comes to building might be different based on the market that you're in and based on some of the resources that you have and some of the assets that you already have at your disposal. But the bottom line is, guys, it's a stars league.
Yeah.
Stars win games, stars win playoff series, stars win championships. So even though Phoenix went about it a different kind of way to get Chris Paul with Devin Booker, they had the centerpiece already in Devin Booker. They just had to surround him with the right pieces. And by the way, one of those pieces is number one overall pick DeAndre Ayton from 2018. And you can do the same thing with the Atlanta Hawks. Like, yeah, they made some really good draft picks along the way, and they splurged in free agency this past offseason, but they had the rebuild centerpiece in Trae Young. If you took Trae Young off the Atlanta Hawks, if you took Devin Booker off the Phoenix Suns, the view of both teams is completely different.
Okay.
So, yeah, you have to have that star. It's a stars league. And if you don't have a star, if you don't have that player that we're talking about, I think you're just going to be spinning your wheels for years until you finally find another route to actually go out and get that kind of guy.
Chris, we all think that the Cavaliers will pick from three to four players, right? Cade Cunningham, we expect to go number one to Detroit. Mm-hmm. Then it comes down to what will Houston do at two? And that four would be Green, Mobley, Suggs, Kuminga, right? So give me your thoughts on those four. Who do you like the most? I'm a Green guy. I love Jalen Green. I think Jalen Green can lead the NBA in scoring one day, be a perennial all-star, and maybe that franchise-altering player. He's the guy I would have ranked in a list of one through four of those guys, number one for me. Who do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're in a situation where they can get this wrong, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, they went into the NBA draft lottery probably trying to talk themselves into the Corey Kisperts of the world and Jalen Johnson and Keon Johnson and some of those guys, right? Now they're in a situation where even if Houston takes Jalen Green at number two, then they get Evan Mobley at three. If Houston takes Evan Mobley at two, then they probably get Jalen Green at number three. And then Jalen Suggs is going to have some support in front offices across the NBA, including in the Cavs front office as well. For me personally, I just like Evan Mobley because he's a unicorn. There aren't many guys in this year's draft that are like him. There aren't many guys in the last 10 drafts that are like him. He can play the four, the five. He can stretch it out to the three-point line. He handles the ball like a guard. He moves like a guard. And he's the kind of big for the modern-day NBA that will never get played off the court. I like Jalen Green, too. He's a freak athletically. He gets compared to Zach LaVine. He's a catch-and-shoot guy at this point, more so than a create-your-own-offense type guy. And I think the Cavs obviously could use an influx of shooting. And I think he's different enough than the guards that they already have that he could, emphasis on could, potentially fit in a three-guard type lineup or at least that kind of setup throughout certain stretches of games. So I don't think they can go wrong. I just prefer Mobley because those kinds of bigs that never get played off the court that could potentially protect, you know, some of the younger, smaller players that the Cavs have on the defensive end, I think that could be transformational for them.
All right, so the last time somebody was called a unicorn, it hasn't worked out. He got injured, and he hasn't recovered with that size in Kristaps Porzingis,
sure.
Right? He hasn't reached that level. My concern is he good enough from the outside? Because that's their biggest weakness. You and I were on that conference call with Kobe mm-hmm. Altman when I talked about the three-point shooting, and he even mentioned, hey, when we were in the finals, we shot more threes than almost every team in the league. So can they afford to keep Jared Allen, who doesn't shoot a three, Mobley, who's not known as a three-point shooter. I know he made strides, but Okoro's not a great three-point shooter. Can they afford to go that route?
I think so, because I think that's a trait that can be developed. And I think they have shown, the Cavs as an organization have shown over the last couple of years, that they're capable of developing these guys into better shooters. As you mentioned, Isaac Okoro got better as the season went on. Larry Nance Jr., since coming to Cleveland, has become more of a prolific three-point shooter. He's made more threes, attempted more threes, shot a higher percentage than he ever did early on in his career. Deddy Osman, for all of his ups and downs, he came here to Cleveland, couldn't shoot a lick, couldn't make shots in practice, couldn't make shots in warm-ups, and then he became a 34 to 38% three-point shooter. Given where he was, that was a step up for him. Darius Garland, you saw what he did as a rookie, then what he did as a sophomore from three-point range. Colin Sexton came into the NBA as a non-shooter. He was supposed to be a liability from that standpoint, and he's a career 38% three-point shooter. So I think we have seen enough examples within the Cavs and away from the Cavs that shooting is a correctable flaw, provided that the mechanics are good enough and provided that the kid is going to be willing to work at it. And everybody that I have talked to that knows Evan Mobley, scouts, executives, some of his coaches with Team USA back in the day, see him as being able to hit an NBA three down the road. Maybe it doesn't happen mm-hmm. this year. It's probably not going to happen this year. Big guys take a longer time to develop. But just because he may not shoot it as well right now, and just because he didn't shoot it a bunch at USC, that doesn't mean that it can't happen for him down the road. And I think while that skill set is developing, guys, there are other ways that he can help you out. You can use him as an offensive hub if you want to. He handles the ball like a guard. He's got feet like a guard. So maybe that shot's not going to be as reliable, but there's playmaking that he can give you that is more like a 3/4 than it is like a 5. Like, not all 7-footers play like all 7-footers. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the kind of 7-footer that is more like Chris Bosh, Anthony Davis, Kevin Garnett, and Kevin Durant than he is like Andre Drummond and some of these other 7-footers.
Chris, that's just it. You know, when you look at last season, it's kind of hard to figure out who this team really is. Because up until the trade, when they brought in Jared Allen anyway, it seemed as though they changed styles of play. Then all of a sudden, it seemed as though maybe we're embracing what the rest of the league does and we started shooting more threes. Can this team develop into a, you know, run and gun type style offense? I don't know. But if that's the case, and you look at this draft and you want a 7-footer in Evan Mobley versus a high scoring Jalen Green, who we think will develop into, dare I say, the second coming of, I won't even say, but we think he'll become an all-star. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into that sense of this is going to be our game plan, can the team that they have now with maybe another added piece here out of this draft develop into a team that can win maybe 30, 35 games next season?
I think it depends on the personnel that they get. I think it depends on what kinds of trades can happen throughout the course of this offseason. That's the goal, obviously. I think everybody would admit around the organization that they want to take steps forward. I don't think it's 10 steps forward, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden they're in the top hierarchy of the Eastern Conference, the way that Atlanta made that jump, right?
Yeah.
The way that the Milwaukee Bucks made that jump a couple of years ago. But I do think they want to compete for a playoff spot. They want to be in that conversation at the very least. And I think they feel like with the right moves, the right picks, and the right continued development of some of these young guys, that they can be in that realm. But in terms of their style of play, Kenny mentioned this, JT, I think it's all predicated on the personnel. Like, you have to adapt based on the personnel that you have. It didn't make a ton of sense for the Cavs to be a run-and-gun team for a lot of last year because they didn't have guys that could shoot very well.
But we didn't know they couldn't shoot because they wouldn't shoot.
Well,
or maybe because they can't.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
But they also had Kevin Love miss how many games? And he's a guy who's going to take 8 to 9 three-pointers a game. He's a guy who's going to create space. He's a guy who's going to threaten the defense in a different kind of way. Larry Nance Jr. doesn't threaten the defense in that same kind of way. Larry Nance Jr. doesn't take as many threes as Kevin Love. You know, Colin Sexton isn't going to take as many threes as Darius Garland. And you can go on and on and on. So, yeah, they've got to shoot more threes. There's no doubt about that. But at the end of the day, it also has to be the right guys taking those kinds of shots.
Chris Fedor, our guest, outstanding Cavaliers beat reporter, Cleveland.com. And you can also check him out in the Plain Dealer on Twitter at Chris Fedor. Chris, Colin Sexton's future in Cleveland, what do you think it is? I think he's best suited coming off the bench on a good team as that instant offense, a better version of Jordan Clarkson. And the reason I say that, and I feel, I don't want to say vindicated by that, but when you look at U.S. Select team, he wasn't picked for that team, but his backcourt mate Darius Garland was, right? We've heard about this past season where other teams' players were, allegedly laughing at Cavalier players because he was a ball hog and wouldn't pass them the ball. He didn't make the all-rookie, all-star game when he was putting up numbers. So it doesn't seem like he's respected around the league. So where does he stand in the future, especially with a contract extension possible next year?
Yeah, that's the thing that looms over this entire conversation. The Cavs are finally in a position now where they have to attach a real value to Colin and what he brings to the table. And I think it's really, really difficult to do that, and I think that's going to determine the direction that they ultimately want to go, guys. If they could get some kind of trade package for Colin that makes them better in the short and the long term, and they don't have to be the one that makes the decision on what that contract is going to look like, and they can rejigger the roster and improve a different area of the roster, I think they would absolutely explore that. I think they have to. If they could find a trade that would allow them to get better and maybe even dump the salary of Kevin Love in a Colin Sexton deal that happens at the same time, I think they would explore that as well. I just don't think they're desperate just to get rid of him. I think they still value him. I think they understand that he is an elite scorer at his position. He's a secondary playmaker, not a primary playmaker, and they try and evaluate him that same kind of way. But I think all options are on the table for the Cavs this offseason. It's a critical offseason. They need to take steps forward. They're willing to listen to a lot of different things. They're willing to do a lot of different things around the roster. And if they get the right kind of offer for Colin Sexton, I absolutely think they will move him. But I do want to say one thing in response, Kenny. Maybe his future is a sixth man. But on this current Cavs roster, he is not a sixth man. He is a starter. Because there is nobody that is good enough on this roster to take his starting job. Nobody.
Especially offensively. You look at it, the guy offers, he averages, his points have gone up every year he's been here. He's instant offense. But then again, like Kenny and I always say, somebody's got to score on a poor team. And I want to go in this direction because, Chris, we keep hearing all these trade rumors. I don't know if there's smoke, there's fire, but Pat Riley has been known to make deals with the Cavaliers before. Would it make sense for them to try to make a deal for Colin Sexton and Kevin Love? Would there be any chance that they could have the cap space to make a move to send both of them to Miami, and what would you get in return?
So that's the other thing that I think complicates the whole Colin Sexton conversation. So any team that would be trying to trade for Colin would be giving up assets and having to pay him $25 to $30 million a year. I think that limits the number of teams that you could have as potential Colin Sexton suitors. But if you start expanding a deal a little bit, and you toss in Kevin Love, maybe you think about Larry Nance Jr., maybe the expiring contract of Torian Prince, a future first-round pick, some of the second-round picks that you've acquired over recent years. Now all of a sudden I think you're talking about more compelling offers. It doesn't mean all of those guys all in the same package, but any of those kinds of pieces, parts, could make it more worth it for another team, like you said, JT, Miami, the New York Knicks, maybe the Philadelphia 76ers, maybe the New Orleans Pelicans, like those kinds of teams. I think on the surface, it's just really, really difficult just to trade Colin because of what I said and right. Because his contract is so small that who are you going to find with that same kind of contract value that is going to make it worth the Cavs trading away a guy who, yes, he's flawed, yes, he needs to get better, but is still one of their better young players. He's just not going to find a lot of matches.
The value on those second-round picks are immeasurable, correct?
They can be if you package them in a bigger deal and you start making it a little bit sweeter. I don't think, like in a vacuum, I don't think second-round picks have a ton of value, but once you start including other assets with that, and you expand the package a little bit, then I think you start to get more people interested.
Hey, Chris, let's do this again before the draft. Great insight, as always. A lot's going to happen between then and now. We'll see which way the Cavs are trending at that point in time. All right, buddy?
Sounds great, guys. Critical offseason. They got to get it right.
You're right on that, Chris. We agree 100%. Chris Fedor checking in via the Wake'em Way hotline on the Cavaliers in the upcoming 2021 NBA draft, the end of this month.